I lived through those early days. So many times I had to change the pain to laughter just to keep from getting crazy. Dressed in black from head to toe, two guitars across our backs, we would walk the city road, seeking someone who would...
Phelps on Tuesday, local officials are looking toward the next steps for her seat. As reported by the Bradenton Herald, the authority to appoint a successor rests with Governor Ron DeSantis under Florida statutes. Phelps, who represented a district covering Parrish, Mayaca City, and sections of Palmetto and Ellenton, had only recently secured her position in the November 2024 elections. The Board of County Commissioners intends to pay tribute to her contributions during their upcoming session on March 3rd. The Florida House of Representatives yesterday approved a measure to rename a portion of U.S. 41 in Sarasota after the legendary Dickie Betts. A stretch in Nokomis will be designated as the Dickie Betts Memorial Highway once the proposal is fully enacted. The move honors the Allman Brothers Band guitarist and founding member, who was a long-term resident of the Sarasota area. State legislators are currently locked in a debate over significant modifications to Florida's voting procedures. House Bill 991, introduced by Fort Myers Representative Jenna Persons Malika, proposes a more restrictive list of acceptable voter IDs. The measure would disqualify several long-standing forms of identification, including credit, debit cards, and IDs issued by neighborhood associations, retirement centers, or public assistance programs. Notably, the bill would allow concealed weapon permits as IDs, but specifically bans the use of student IDs regardless of whether they were issued by public state institutions. This would make student credentials the only form of government-issued identification explicitly barred under the new rules. The ultimate fate of the changes is uncertain. A companion Senate bill, SB 1334, focuses on citizenship verification but lacks the House ID restrictions and audit changes. A fierce nor'easter impacting the Northeast caused significant travel headaches at Sarasota-Bradenton International Airport on Monday. The Herald Tribune reports that dozens of flights were grounded and nearly a dozen were delayed as a storm blanketed northern states in heavy snow. Data from FlightAware indicated that a ripple effect of weather resulted in over 1,000 cancellations across Florida and more than 5,000 nationwide. This has been Ed James III with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, February 26th.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers, and programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2025-26 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. My guest today is Lourdes Ramirez. She is the current president of CONA. I first got to know Lourdes when she served as the president of CONA. This was going back about a decade, and I was the vice president of CONA. I know many of you know Lourdes from her successful litigation to preserve Siesta Key's comprehensive plan limits. She put in a legal challenge with the county regarding their mega hotel plans. So She is going to be joining us in just a little bit. We're going to be talking about a recent decision by the by Judge Carroll at the local district court, where Lourdes Ramirez's nonprofit protects Siesta Key. They sought to block a key provision in a settlement between Sarasota County and Siesta Key businessman Michael Holderness. This had to do with four lots. It was a land swap. I'm just going to read some of the reporting of Derek Gillum. He's with Suncoast Searchlight, which is a great group of investigative reporters here in Sarasota. This was published in the Herald Tribune, and the title is Judge Rejects Challenge to Controversial Siesta Key Land Swap. A judge recently rejected a last-ditch effort to unwind a controversial land deal, clearing the way for a home to be built on property the county once bought to preserve. The legal challenge, filed in December by Lourdes Ramirez of the nonprofit Protect Siesta Key, sought to block a key provision in a settlement between Sarasota County and Siesta Key businessman Michael Holderness. Under that agreement, the county would trade its preservation parcel at 162 Beach Road, valued at $2.8 million, for Holderness's four beachfront lots, valued at less than $100,000 combined. So I'm going to stop to explain that a bit. Mr. Holderness had four beachfront lots. I believe these were, you know, right near the water, and they were not buildable lots. So that would account for their lower value of $100,000 combined. We'll check that out with Lourdes. And then the parcel that the county bought, they bought for preservation, right? So they had a parcel at 162 Beach Road. And this, I believe, is in the Avenida Messina behind the village on Siesta Key. So they had bought a parcel for conservation, which was valued at $2.8 million. Why was it valued at $2.8 million? You can build on it, right? It's a buildable lot. So Holderness was trading the four lots valued at less than $100,000 combined for the buildable lot at 162 Beach Road, which the county had bought for conservation, and that's valued at $2.8 billion. So that's quite a difference in value. The deal also would let Holderness build a 5,000-square-foot house on the county-owned lot, despite the county having denied similar requests when the land was privately owned. That's because it sits behind a coastal setback line. So the agreement was made to end a federal lawsuit Holderness had filed against the county over property rights tied to his four beachfront parcels near Beach Access 3. In that case, he argued that public beach access signage near his property invited trespassers and that the county infringed on his rights as a waterfront landowner. By trading those parcels to the county, he said, they would become part of the public beach. In exchange, he would get a lot on which he could build a house. But Ramirez and other petitioners argued that the county had no legal authority to give up land it bought for preservation and allow a house to be built. Circuit Judge Hunter Carroll ruled February 17th that Ramirez and the other plaintiffs did not have legal standing to challenge the county's decision. Holderness celebrated the courtroom victory. Now we can have a public beach forever, complete with parks and recreation rules our great deputies can use to enforce the law, he said. Or no, he wrote in a text message to Suncoast Searchlight. Quote, public ownership ensures this beach remains accessible, not exclusive, and that's an investment that pays dividends for generations. Ramirez, who has been involved in zoning issues on Siesta Key for more than 20 years, has not yet given up. She said her organization will explore other legal avenues, though she did not know the exact tack she planned to pursue. Ramirez noted that because the issue was decided on standing, which is a legal term that means the plaintiffs in this case did not have a valid grounds to bring the challenge, she is still hopeful to stop construction. Quote, it was a disappointment because I know the merits of the case are very strong, unquote, Ramirez says. And she's here with us now, Lourdes. you joined us. I knew you were coming a little late, so I just read a bit of the story that we're talking about. Four lots worth $100,000, beachfront lots, mm-hmm. that Mr. Holderness made an agreement with the county to swap those lots for a $2.8 million lot that the county purchased for preservation.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I'm going to pull that microphone closer to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay.
So everybody understands, and I'm going to get into some PAC political action committee information regarding Mr. Holderness, because I think that's interesting in the context of what we've got here. But let's talk about you before we get into this. Lourdes, you have been very active. You've lived here for 25 years, 26 years?
27 years now.
27 years. Okay, that's like me. And you are somebody who is a veteran of zoning issues, of understanding the comprehensive plan. You've litigated successfully to uphold the comprehensive plan and keep out mega hotels on Siesta Key. For those who've never met you, you know, and you've been you're the current president, the past president of Kona, and the past president of the Sarasota Republican Women's Club.
Yes.
And also the Siesta Key Neighborhood Association.
Oh, Protect Siesta Key is my current nonprofit.
But in the past.
Oh, the Siesta Key Association.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So for someone who's never met you, what's your background and what would you like them to know?
Well, thank you for inviting me onto the show, because this is an important topic. When I started living here, I started to see the county didn't seem to be following the rules. Not till this day. I had a neighbor who approached me about an issue, and she formed a nonprofit called Alliance of Siesta Key. Her name was Ann Kaplan. You knew her.
Oh, yeah.
And she gave me the background on what was going on with the county, and that's what started me on zoning issues. Mm-hmm. And when I joined the Siesta Key Association from around 2003 timeframe, until I was there till 2011, I was president most of that time. My whole focus has been zoning and working on zoning mm-hmm. updates, working on comprehensive plan updates, finding county violating the rules over and over and over again.
And why would somebody care about zoning? Because it seems so technical, but it really has an impact on our life. What's the impact?
Well, that's the key. I mean, when you go into a neighborhood, there's an expectation, right? You expect mm-hmm. it to be single family. You don't want to see a gas station be built next door, right?
Yeah.
You have an expectation, and that's what zoning's all about. It's an expectation of what you think or you believe when you purchased your property, invested in your property, what the neighborhood's going to look like. You know, when you move to an area, just like I did, I had mm-hmm. an option of moving to the East Coast or the West Coast of Florida.
Yeah.
Didn't like the urbanization of the East Coast. Mm-hmm. I grew up in New York City, wanted to get away from that. So when I got to Sarasota County and Siesta Key, I'm like, okay, this is what I want. I wanted all the amenities we see, the cultural amenities, the beaches, mm-hmm. without that kind of intense development.
Yeah.
So that's what zoning is all about. You start to see that the county has a responsibility to look at how we grow. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see, like, where it was going.
Yeah, yeah. So we've just talked about the current litigation, Protect Siesta Key. The judge said you didn't have standing. And I've seen a lot of legal cases kind of fall apart on that issue, because in order to bring a lawsuit, you actually have to be an interested party. Right?
Correct.
So I don't know if you want to start with standing. Let's just start with this. Why was this so concerning that you, through the, your nonprofit, decided to bring litigation? What was the reason?
I'm glad you asked, because a lot of people recognize that the Protexia has to keep formed. I formed it with others who were concerned about hotels, the mega hotels. I won a lawsuit as an individual. Another individual won a lawsuit too. He was after me, so he didn't get as much publicity. But there was two lawsuits in the county circuit court about mega hotels. So everyone thinks that's all we're all about. But in reality, we're about the county following the laws that protect our island. And what concerned me was there was three things that concerned me on this particular petition. First, we have a line in the sand, literally.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. where you can build. You know, decades ago, it's called a coastal setback, and you can't build, you know, seaward of that because they're trying to prevent the fact that it's becoming all concrete. And you know, as you know, the beaches are dynamic.
Yes.
And they have a lot of movement.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen houses literally fall into the ocean.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they have a coastal setback where in order to get that variance, you have to fit like five criteria. You got to meet five criteria. And that was what they were looking for in this particular parcel. That was one issue. The second issue, the one that really got to me, was the fact that this particular parcel was purchased by the county in perpetuity in 2017 under the Neighborhood Parkland Program.
Which we've seen fall apart before.
Yes, and it's coming up for a ballot referendum this year for renewal. You know, so I think it's timely for us to address what the county is doing to this program. And
you mean environmentally sensitive lands?
The Neighborhood Parkland Program.
Okay.
What happens is it expires in 2029. So they're asking to on the ballot this year to renew it for another 20 years so they can bond out more monies to purchase more lands. Yeah. I love the idea. And I just don't know if the county is, you know, really
walking their talk.
I'm concerned. Really concerned. And that's something we should talk about, too, because what they're proposing, as a side note, for this potential renewal is to add active uses to parks, and that's something we can go down.
So that, you know, an active use could be a snack bar, it could be a gaming place. You know, on City Island, there was recently a proposal to put like an amusement park on City Island, and people were like, no, you know, so beware the active uses contingency or addendum. Because that can open the door to all kinds of uses that essentially can either price people out or the parking issues become so awful that nobody goes there anymore. I mean, it's like the Yogi Berra, nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded like that.
Remember when DeSantis proposed active uses in the state parks and one of them was a hotel? Remember that? So that's something we have to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I was still upset that the county gave away this land, you know, and that was an issue. Yeah. So that was issue number two. And the third one was that when they talked about this particular land, we have a Siesta Key Overlay District. The maximum impervious surface, it should be 50% for all buildings and all structures. This was 100%, almost 100%.
So impervious surface is like concrete. Water doesn't go through. And you're taking a natural space and making it, it has stormwater implications. But
flooding roads. So we had all those three issues, and I was very concerned. So we brought the lawsuit forward because, again, the county's not following the rules. They didn't look at the coastal setback variance. They gave away lands that they shouldn't have given away. Mm. And then, of course, they allowed other things. So that's why we decided to go forward with the lawsuit.
Okay. So what would you say? Well, there's a couple of things. I'm going to go to the comments of Tom Knight.
Yes, he was very upset.
He was newly elected, and he was newly elected when he approved this swap, and he voted yes.
Yes.
But he said he was never informed about the value of the property the county was giving up or he was not informed that by staff that it had been bought for preservation using the neighborhood parkland program. He said he would have not voted in favor of 2024 for this settlement for the land swap, but he felt his hands were now tied given his prior support. Knight later told, I'm reading from the Suncoast Searchlight article, so he later told Suncoast Searchlight that, quote, misleading by omission is no better than a lie, unquote, indicating his displeasure with not having all the facts prior to a major land use decision. County Commissioner Mark Smith voted against the request as he believed the deal went against the county's growth plans to protect sand dunes and natural habitats. And the deal also proved controversial to other beachfront lot owners. It's disappointing that the substance of the discussion that day wasn't enough for Commissioner Knight to be clear. And my gosh, how can it be that staff doesn't spell out the details of a deal like this? And so you've got a new county commissioner in the dark.
Yes, in 2024, we scoured that document, and I reviewed the video. The county attorney approached the county commissioners and basically said, oh, I want you, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'm looking for approval of this settlement. And when you read the documents associated with a settlement, there was not one word that it came from the Neighborhood Parkland Program. Not
really?
One word that was purchased in 2017 for $1.4 million. Not one.
Isn't there some duty on the part of the county to notice that kind of a deal with clarity? And that, wouldn't that be one of the key features?
Well, in 2024, it wasn't a public hearing. It was just county attorney reports, so there was no notice.
Wow.
There was no notice. And so when the county, you know, portion of the county meeting is like reports from the different departments. Mm-hmm. And this was the attorney's office. And that's mm-hmm. what his report was. It wasn't 2025. I mean, yes, when mm-hmm. A week before the public hearing, this came up. And I'm like, okay, let's read this. And even the staff's report, you've done enough meetings, you know, that because mm-hmm. there's a cover letter that describes everything, including all actions previous commissioners have done.
Yeah.
And then it comes, that's the cover letter, and then it's the staff's report, which is much more detailed, pages and pages. Okay. Yeah. In the cover memo, not one mention that it came from the Neighborhood Parkland Program. When it had a chronological list of what happened on this parcel, that was omitted in the cover memo.
Really?
It wasn't until I started reading the staff's report on page 3, paragraph 3, last sentence, that there was one sentence that said this parcel was purchased by the Neighborhood Parkland Program. And then that's when I started to raise the issue, mm-hmm. a week before the public hearing.
And that was just because, you see, most people aren't going to comb through the notice the way you do. It's just not something most people do.
Or have the time to, because it's pages.
Exactly. And then the timing of it is so inadequate, right? A week before the meeting. And the county commission is in the same boat, I think, because they have reams and reams of paper to look at before a county commission meeting. So it's just kind of mind-boggling. And I think Knight's point is misleading by omission is no better than a lie.
He's right.
I mean, yeah.
He was very upset that day. He talked about losing trust.
Mm-hmm.
And it was disappointing, you know, to see that even though we made the argument that day and pointed out, you know, this is Neighborhood Parkland Program, they still went forward with it, which what prompted us to file the lawsuit.
Yeah. And the Neighborhood Parkland Program, it's money set aside for parks in neighborhoods. That's not going to be touched.
Right.
It's not going to be touched. Okay. What? How do you respond to Mr. Holderness? Because I'm sure he believes that the county, this is good for the community because his beachfront lots will now become part of the public beach and the public is going to benefit for generations. What are your thoughts on that idea?
Well, As the article also noted, the county is in the process of trying to buy. This is the most seaward of the lots. And this lot, these lots in particular, the county attorney's reports clearly stated that out of the last 25 years, 19, it was submerged. And
So his lots are underwater?
Not currently.
Oh,
because
okay.
of Helene put sand on it.
But okay.
Of the last 25 years, a majority of it has been submerged.
Mm-hmm.
These are submerged land. And the county attorney's office thought, as submerged lands, they could have taken it before they came up with this idea.
Wait a minute. So they could have just done, like, an eminent domain thing, and they could have just grabbed it?
According to the county attorney's report from 2024, when they could have... And so the county has been in the process of buying these small lots for, they offered one recently. She contacted me and told me $30,000 for that lot. So here's a situation where, yes, because the water line is right on his property,
mm-hmm.
people are walking through it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is near Beach Access 3 with hardly any parking. So it's not like a public beach, you know. He got upset and tried to force the county to impose rules on the property. They wouldn't because it's private property. But the county offered him $500,000 on top of giving him this free land. Okay?
Wait a minute. So you're saying they offered him $500,000 and the $2.8 million parcel?
Correct. And a memorial to his mother on Beach Access 3. That was part of the parcel. That's the deal. That was the settlement.
That was the settlement. So he's okay. So this article doesn't say anything about the $500,000.
Yeah, that was part of the whole settlement. It was a three-part settlement.
So he's getting $500,000 plus a buildable $2.8 million lot,
right?
For lots that are worth $100,000. But because of where they are, see, this is the thing that under Rick Scott, the privatization of our coastline got ramped up, and they started defining the public's right of access to the high water line, which really means the high tide mark, the mean high tide mark.
Mean tide, yeah.
Which essentially means that if somebody owns the land behind the beach, or they own up to the sand, and you're putting your beach towel above the mean high water line. So above where, the tide comes in over a number of years, that landowner can tell you to leave, right?
Yeah, 80% of Siesta Key beaches are privately owned. It has been for decades.
Yeah. But this one was really used by the public, that people in the area would walk down there, but not a ton, but it had been used. And I'm just wondering, was Mr. Holderness putting up signs? Was he telling people they couldn't use it?
A majority of the condos and other property owners are doing the same.
Okay.
And it started, you're right. When I first came down here, even though they were private beaches, there was complete clear access. They didn't really
Nobody
bother.
Nobody made a big deal about it.
But as tourism got a little uglier, people were getting a little bit obnoxious. And then when the hotels issue came up and the hotels were trying to say that those private beaches could be used by their guests because they weren't beachfront, these
uh-huh.
hotels being proposed.
Yeah.
That upset and made more people territorial because they said, you're going to get your guests on my beach. They're going to make a mess out of it. I'm liable for any kind of injury because that's their land. And you are advertising our beach as your access. So that's when you start to see more of the signs go up and down. And it does upset a lot of the tourists because we're accustomed to not being bothered. But it's the result of county actions, in my opinion. They could have done it a little bit better years ago.
Yeah. What do you do now? So tell me about the decision.
As you know, I've sued before.
Yes.
And those are considered de novo cases, which means when you go before a court, and when the hotel issues, we can present new evidence, and including our backgrounds and everything, how we're affected, hurricane evacuation studies, et cetera. But this case was a writ of certiorari, and this one is you had to depend on what was said during the public hearing or what was submitted to during the public hearing. And I wasn't familiar with the difference. I was working with a new lawyer, and she thought I knew. So when you go before them, we did, you know, say, you know, we lived on the quay. I had somebody, a member of Protect Siesta Key, who lives right across the street as part of the lawsuit. So we say, okay, we have some proximity. We have the fact that we're very vocal, and we've done this before. We're protective of the key. But what we didn't say, which I didn't know we had to say, is that you had to state a personal injury. And that's what they were looking for. He was looking for not that he was looking for, like, you had to say something like, oh, okay, the development will cause more flooding on the streets, which means I will have a tough time getting out of my area, or I walk by it. Because I didn't live close to the hotel, but I was able to use the fact that I walked by the area all the time, that I, and also my background.
You went to the post office, you did your errands. So it's interesting because I'm sure those things are still true, right?
Yeah.
They're still true. They're certainly true for the gentleman across the street.
Right.
But because they weren't put in the public record during the approval,
right?
Yeah. Then the judge couldn't look at that.
Exactly. Then he said that was part of, there's something called Raynard. It has like three tests. And he chose one in which you had to prove personal injury. We were choosing the third. That said, you know, you don't need personal injury to prove the fact that the merits of the case is true and that we have standing. And so that's where we're in disagreement with the judge.
Okay. So is there an avenue for you all to appeal? Have you decided what you're going to do yet?
Yes. We haven't decided yet because there are several things we're looking at. We expanded our legal representation. We have another lawyer. We have three wonderful lawyers now. We're happy with, and they're now discussing what options we're going to do.
Okay. What's it like for you to be doing this? I mean, most people wouldn't do this, Lourdes. You know, and where do you get your mojo?
I think it's the whole idea that if I disobeyed the rules, they come down hard on me, right?
Oh, God,
We know who they prefer, who they don't prefer.
Right.
You know what I mean? If a developer violates the rules, let him go. Let's give him a variance. Let's give him an exception. But if I decide my fence is 6 inches above the maximum required, take that down.
We're seeing a lot around. A lot of the rules for most people, and then for your buddies, that's happening at every level of government.
Yes, that's true.
It's horrible.
And it's frustrating because when you live in a big area like New York City and you see the corruption and stuff, and you go to Sarasota County, oh, sweet, nice.
See,
everybody obeys the rules.
All right, I got to take issue with that.
Okay.
Because I was born in New York. I grew up in Westchester County. I'm familiar. I lived in your old neighborhood, Washington Heights, where you grew up.
Yes.
You know. And my husband's always like, it's like this everywhere. It's like this everywhere. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, I promise you, it is not like this everywhere. You know,
I don't want it to be like this. I mean, that's the reason why we look for places where we could say peacefully that I could trust that, you know, what we're the sales job about our area is true. Mm-hmm. And I think I get very frustrated to see that. The county is not, it's not just the developers not following the rules and getting away with it, but the county themselves, the ones we're supposed to rely on, are not following the rules.
Yeah.
And that's what gets me upset.
And you do see the outsized influence of staff. You see the huge role because they're the ones, you know, they're the ones paying attention to all of the intricacies. You know, Tom Knight didn't have the institutional knowledge. He was a new commissioner coming on the scene. And then, and the kind of attention a citizen has to pay to the agenda, to what's coming up, is this going to affect me? It's quite a lot. But speaking to your point about who is preferred, I think it's interesting to have a look at a political committee called Sarasota Manatee Defense Fund. And Sarasota Manatee Defense Fund is chaired by Michael Holderness. It is a political committee that is registered with the state of Florida. I believe Noreen Farmer is the treasurer and registered agent. And Mr. Holdren is at the amount of money going into that PAC. I'm going to pull up my docs here to look at contributions and then expenditures. So the amount of money that has been gathered in that PAC, it opened, the first donation was in August of 2022. And then a few days later, Mr. Holdren has put in $25,000. And then in 3 weeks later, he put in another $20,000. In November of 2023, he put in $20,000. In April 30th of 24, he put in $10,000. May 15th of 2024, he put in $25,000. June 12th of 2024, he put in $25,000. The total amount in that pack, there's 13 contributions, the total comes to $144,500. But of that money, Mr. Holderness is responsible for $125,000 of the donations. So the lion's share of the money, about 85%, comes from Mr. Holderness. Now, if you look at who did that money go to, there are listed, there's a couple things. One is, I used to be able to see the actual treasurers. Sometimes treasurers don't get paid at all in a PAC, which is bizarre because someone is taking care of the money. Somebody's getting paid and you don't see the expenditure. Now I'm seeing a company called PAC Financial Management getting paid to manage the money. And what I think is troubling about this is, I could see if Eric Robinson was getting paid, it said his company, right? And there was a pack where Joe Gruters and Eric Robinson were getting $375, $450, $500 a month, where there was no activity in the pack. There were actually no line items, but they were getting paid a monthly fee to administer the pack, which I was looking at it like, that doesn't look right. And he was a state senator or a representative. So you've got a public official getting paid through a PAC for managing the PAC, or his firm is getting paid, but there's no actual activity. That seemed very excessive. And when I reported on that, immediately they stopped doing it. So now we're seeing this company that has that is being paid, and so it's worth looking into who's involved with that company. Okay, so this PAC, which is chaired by Mr. Holderness, and he put $125,000 out of the $144,000 that and change that's in the PAC. $5,000 went to South County Conservatives. South County Conservatives was the PAC that put out mailers against Tom Knight when he was running in 2024 for county commission. And these were mailers that attacked him, his conservative credentials. They were saying that he was, with Black Lives Matter, things like that. So don't you remember that?
I remember the mailers. Know that Mike Holderness was behind it.
Well, his PAC donated to the PAC behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the game. You want to be able to say, oh, no, that was not me. But the shell game is you give it to a PAC that gives to another PAC, and then you have plausible deniability. But the reality is the PAC led by Holderness, gave to South County Conservatives, which went after Tom Knight. Let's see. His PAC gave $2,000 to, $1,000 to Neil Rainford's campaign, $1,000 to Will Robinson's campaign, $1,000 to Friends of Neil Rainford, which was the PAC that supported Neil Rainford. It gave $1,000 to Teresa Mass' campaign, $1,000 to Ron Kutzinger's campaign, $1,000 to Mike Moran's campaign, another $2,500 to Friends of Neil Rainford, which is, again, the PAC, $1,000 to Ron Turner's campaign, $2,500 to Buchanan for Florida. There's lots of big checks, multiple 10 grand, 25 grand, 15 grand to the Republican Party of Florida. Friends of Danny Nix, which is south of us. Danny Nix represents, I think he's in the state.
South County.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mr. Holderness has founded a political committee, lushly funded the political committee with $125,000 that then gave to other PACs, one of which attacked Tom Knight. He's given to county commission campaigns. And so, you know, I always, like, I bang this drum all the time. When you get a mailer and you're a voter, oh my gosh, you need to really be skeptical, especially when it's a committee, because committees are often just funding mechanisms for people with big money to put out a political message. You know, they're not, it's not like there's really a committee, in my view. It's right. My opinion. It's not like there's really a committee meeting all the time talking about, you know, conservative messaging or conservative actions for South County. That's not what this is. It's a funding mechanism to get around campaign finance rules, to get around limits about donating to candidates. And so that's the only investment that I'm aware of at this time. It's the one I'm talking about now. I can look at, see if there's more. But think about the value that Mr. Holderness has received from his $125,000 investment. So he puts $125,000 in this Sarasota Manatee Defense Fund political committee. He's chairing the PAC. It's, the money's being distributed to a PAC that's attacked, you know, a county commissioner, would be county commissioner, to different campaigns. Fiona McFarland, by the way, she's another one that got money from Mr. Holderness. He's got $400,000 lots, and he wants to build, but he can't. So he gets a settlement. He sues the county over his property rights, right? This is why the county settled with him, because he's saying people shouldn't be on my beach and you're somehow interfering.
Stop, not being proactive, stopping
yeah,
them.
You're not being proactive. You're not stopping them, which it's not clear to me the county has to make sure 24/7. And I'll let you respond to that. But my point is his lawsuit settlement, he got a $2.8 million lot that's a buildable lot that was preserved under the neighborhood parkland program, $500,000 in cash, and, you know, for $25,000 a pop lots for $100,000 worth of land. And my question is, and I think it's very reasonable to be asking, gee, does all of his political donating enhance his position? And I think it does.
Well, and you think of some people forget that he was one of the four people who wanted to change the comprehensive plan and add a mega hotel on his parcel back in 2021. So he has not only these parcels that he wanted, you know, mm-hmm. some influence over, but also he wanted his own mega hotel, 170 units on less than an acre.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm sure that that's why a lot of these people who donate to PACs hope for.
Oh yeah, I mean it's such a cost effective investment for a developer to swing a land use decision, to be setting up a PAC or having somebody else do it, and then, you know, flipping money through different PACs into that PAC, which I've documented quite a bit. And why, you know, people, why do local elections matter? Why do they matter? Well, your property value is impacted by these decisions. Your commute is impacted by these decisions. The level of public safety, the investment in police, in the fire departments is impacted. Public education with vouchers now, what we're seeing, you know, shifting public sector education funding into the private sector. That was a huge windfall for wealthy families who were already paying private school tuition they could afford it. Well, now they're getting $8,000 a pop as like a subsidy for their private school tuition for their kids. And what's the, you know, what's most people aren't in that position. So there's just a huge campaign finance problem that is giving us a bought government, and you're seeing it in things like, why can't you get a parking space at the beach? Why are you being kicked off the beach? What's going on? You know, there's a real ramification.
Well, it's true. I mean, look at the return on investment that developers get. You know, for a few thousand dollars, they get millions. Mm-hmm. And this is just one example, but mm-hmm. almost every developer in town who uses this system gets millions of dollars in return for just
infrastructure built for them.
Exactly.
They get reduced. Remember the property by the library on Fruitville? That was sold to Benderson for well below its market value. It was like $2 or $3 million below its market value.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a long game. It, you know, the Schrader Manatee Ranch being paid $7 million to cancel development rights. Those $7 million, about 6-7 years later, were awarded back to them. They were given a different name, open space credits, but we paid $7 million. Sarasota County taxpayers paid the developers $7 million. And in the end, the concession that they gave that we were paying them for, not building 2,500 units, they got awarded back.
Right.
I mean, and so it's a long game, and the environmental implications, the quality of life implications are just huge.
Yeah.
So
I want to say, you talked about my knowledge of zoning and how I do it. I don't know how you do the PAC thing. We're very lucky to have someone like you in Sarasota County monitoring that, because I can't make heads or tails out of it. You can monitor it. You truly have a spider chart when you put those things together.
You know, it's funny because there's this great book on corruption. It's called On Corruption in America. And she talks about Medusa and the snake, you know, all the snakes coming out of Medusa. And of course, she was bad news. And I'm like, that's what my pack charts look like. It's Medusa. That's exactly what they look like. And so many different heads of Medusa. And, you know, at the end of the day, so many of the names that are from the buckets of money, right? Yeah. I literally show a bucket and the donation from it, each different, person or their entity. You know, they're usually hiding behind some LLC that when you look up the LLC, then you realize who's behind it. So it is a system with many tentacles, and it doesn't serve us. One of the things that I gave a talk recently, and I was showing them what has happened since I ran for office in 2010, which I just jumped into the race as an independent. I had no party affiliation. I did not know what I was getting into, but I was just like, I can't take it. This corruption is driving me nuts. So the thing is, when I ran, a candidate could not form a PAC. You weren't even supposed to talk to a PAC.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
You were not even supposed to coordinate with a PAC. Now candidates are running PACs.
That's true.
You know, was it Therese Mass? One of the county commission candidates was heading up their friends of PAC. I'll look it up on my laptop just to make sure. And, but you're seeing it across the state that these candidates, the biggest one that concerned me was, you've got Friends of Ron DeSantis, and Friends of Ron DeSantis was for his presidential aspirations, and then when that didn't work out, he it's Theresa Mast. Theresa Mast is the principal officer. She is the chairman of her PAC. The treasurer is David Rambaugh. By the way, when you see local candidates who are getting PAC managers or treasurers out of Tallahassee, red flag. For me, that's a huge red flag. Why the heck are you hiring someone out of Tallahassee to run a Sarasota County campaign? Makes no sense to me. And for me, the red flag is, so are you looped in with this network that just delivers for special interests? So Teresa Mast is the chairman of Friends of Teresa Mast. But getting back to the Friends of Ron DeSantis, that PAC changed its name. And you would only know it. You can't look it up under the old name anymore on the state website. It's now Empower Parents Florida. And they were sending out text messages in support of Karen Rose when she ran the last time in 2024. And when you look at the outstanding balance in that PAC when it closed, was over $700,000. And the state doesn't require, and it was, and the chairman, it had changed a few times, but the chairman was Blazing Goglia, who is a state legislator. Now, to me, what the heck is the state legislator doing administering a PAC? Total conflict of interest, total way for special interests to put money in a big slush pile. Not good, right?
Right.
And then when the PAC closes, there's no final accounting for over $700,000. Or no, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Was it 80? I'm getting, it was 84 at the end of the, I'm sorry.
They had 84,000 that was left.
Yeah, it was 84 that was left. It was 700 that was the total. So 84, excuse me all. But I think you and I share this. What the heck, right? How can this be? And I think we also grew up in a time when in this country, we were proud of the way things functioned. There was, I mean, look at what made Nixon resign. It's child's play compared to what's going on in government today.
All the way down to the local level.
Yeah, exactly. All the way down to the local level. You know, I mean, I look at what happened with Kelly Franklin being smeared by a city commissioner who didn't vet the information that he was using and basically was calling her a racist. And it's just like, who are we? And how do we stop this?
Here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, thank you, Citizens United. That started it,
yeah.
I believe.
Citizens United. So, but getting back to Siesta Key and Protect Siesta Key, so you are looking at further steps, further legal steps.
I think it would be crazy for us not to see what we can do. Because mm-hmm. the merit of the case, there's no question. The county should have followed the coastal setback variance. They should have checked, especially when staff, in that case, said they didn't meet the minimum criteria. Okay, so that's in the report. So
they didn't meet the minimum criteria, just refresh our memory for what?
For building on that site. Because, okay. You know, in order for you to build seaward of the coastal setback variance, it has to be the minimum required. You know, that you need to do so that you can't build the entire lot.
Is this the $2.8 million lot?
Yes.
So it's even questionable whether that $2.8 million lot can be developed.
I don't think it can. The Neighborhood Parkland Program clearly states, besides the fact that a county has a website mm-hmm. on the Neighborhood Parkland Program, especially now that they want to renew it. So they're promoting it. And there's a video there. Nicole Whistler, who's now the new assistant county administrator, said, you know, we buy these lands. Let me take a step back. The voters voted in 2005 to create the Neighborhood Parkland Program with an additional 0.25 mils that we contribute towards it. So it's clear.
It's our money
mm-hmm. for specific use. Mm-hmm. And she says in this video, it's for perpetuity. And then to see that in 2017 and 2025, that's what they define perpetuity is not good. But that's the thing. I think it really bothers me with the Neighborhood Parkland Program that in the ordinance, it says when the county buys the property mm-hmm. and maintains the property, the only thing they can dispose is if they purchase a big parcel, and part of it didn't qualify. So let's say they had a gas station on the corner, but the rest is parkland. They can sell that portion, but for the full price, and the money has to go back into the Environmentally Sensitive Lands program. None of that happened here.
No.
None of that happened here. So no. It was given away. And I really got upset because the county attorney at this meeting said, I have this transcript of this, but I have to paraphrase because I don't have it in front of me. But he said, well, sometimes we buy parkland that met the criteria, and over time it no longer meets our criteria, so we have to surplus it. And I'm like, okay, let me understand this. You buy with our tax dollars that we contribute, pay extra for, to buy something that met the criteria. Part of the neighborhood parkland money goes to maintaining that parcel, mm-hmm. and somehow between that purchase and at one point it becomes developable land that you have to give away to a developer.
It's like Tinkerbell comes with her development wand.
What
and
the?
That's
yes.
ridiculous. Thing is, why would it be that the county doesn't have to follow their own rules?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I don't get. And staff doesn't have to document those rules.
Exactly.
And if staff fails to document the true history, it's like a title search. Why aren't you doing an accurate title search? You're telling me that as a county taxpayer, I have less right and I don't have standing? I'm looking at this going, why wouldn't any taxpayer in the county have
right.
standing? Because you've used our money and I've lived here and paid taxes during that time. I have every expectation that's being supposed to be done the right way, and you're deciding that you don't have to follow the rules.
Right.
How does that work?
I know, exactly. It really upsets me that, you know, the county not only follows the rules, but it's so blatant, you know,
mm-hmm.
and even if you look at it, and again, staff didn't even, let's say it wasn't purchased by Neighborhood Parkland, you know, there are also other parcels I worry about, but if you're going to have a $1.4 million parcel you purchase, which is now worth $2.8 million, and they're giving you parcels that's worth $100,000, don't you think you're not getting the best side for the, you're supposed to represent us.
Or don't you think you need to document why it is
that
of value, what is the reason, that, especially if they could have taken those lots by eminent domain under the submerged lands. Like, we're talking about lots that Mr. Holderness was trading for $500,000 and a $2.8 million theoretically buildable lot. But if the county had the authority and clearly they view these lots as having some value, that they're willing to give so much for settlement, you know, well over their assessed value of $100,000, why in the heck didn't they just take them with eminent domain?
Or even do what they did to this one. She has a parcel just two over from Mike Holderness, and they offered her $30,000. So it goes to show you.
So she's not getting a buildable lot. Well, it's because he filed a lawsuit. I mean, he filed a lawsuit saying they were interfering with his property rights. And there it's like, well, county, why aren't you willing to defend
exactly
your constituents? Why are you willing to cave? And I go back to, let's have a look at Mr. Holderness's campaign finance activity.
Right.
I think that is very relevant to the conversation of, you know, what could be the motivation?
Yeah, she wasn't a campaign contributor, but he was. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Well, right, and he set up this political pack, okay? And I'm going to go back. He's the chairman of Sarasota Manatee Defense Fund. Of the $144,300 that's in there, $125,000 comes from him. And much of it went to the Republican Party of Florida, but then, you know, I listed all the campaign donations and PAC donations, and there's more. I couldn't obviously list them all. So everybody, I have to say goodbye now. We're running down. Oh, Lord,
we can talk
come
for
back.
Hours.
I know. Please come back. Everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1. LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.